This is Tax at the Speed of Tech, a podcast from BDO's Tax Practice. Each episode, we'll connect with inspiring thought leaders to get their take on pressing issues in tax and technology innovation, impactful trends, as well as their predictions for the future.
Many folks I meet in tax accounting and tax technology roles are not where they thought they'd be when they started their careers. For instance, I started my collegiate experience flying airplanes over the vast plains of North Dakota. When that journey didn't feel like my path, I was filling out an application for the Federal Air Marshals while simultaneously applying to be an early employee at a quirky tax software startup called TaxStream. For many folks, it isn't quite as extreme of a pivot. Maybe they started in audit or financial systems. I have no science to back this up, but anecdotally, I do believe there is a gravitational quality to the profession that seems to attract a very specific and delicate balance of detail-oriented yet creative problem solvers. Today, we get to revel in a corner of that tax universe where this is most certainly the case. Income tax accounting is such a curious world where there are as many rules as there are interpretations and variations. You have the Qs and the Ks, the FIN 48s and the FIN 18s, state allocation and foreign repatriation. In a world where a 13th month is possible, the artful thrive. As the global landscape has evolved over the last decade with mounting regulation from the OECD and pressure on transparency from ESG, the permutations of data that might have once been a provision, a compliance, and a true-up are now manyfold. I'm excited today to talk with Mary Ellen Robb, Senior Manager at CorpTax, about the fun times ahead for income tax accounting and all of its many tentacles and technologies. Mary Ellen, welcome. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great, Chris. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining the podcast. Let's start, if you could, for everyone. What is your role at CorpTax, and are you where you thought you'd be?
It's funny because I love when I get asked that question. And let me tell you why. So my primary role at CorpTax, I'm a senior manager in our professional services team. I assist our customers with best practice implementations, from compliance to provision, but my main priority has been OECD focused the last 8 years, with country by country reporting first and now coming into global minimum tax. And this keeps me pretty busy. But with CorpTax, we get tremendous opportunities to work cross-functionally. For example, I get to assist our sales team with generating new CorpTax customers. I work with marketing, I work with learning on webinars and various trainings. And in addition, I've had the opportunity to work with our CMD folks, which is our content management and design teams, on testing new products. I've assisted with both CBC and GMT testing. So you can see I'm not just wearing one hat. I actually wear many. And I've had the opportunity not only to work on software implementations, but really focus on so many other aspects of the business. But to answer your question, am I where I thought I would be? No, I'm not. not at all. I never thought technology would be my primary role growing up in such a tax-driven world, especially, you know, graduating with an accounting degree from Duquesne University. I thought I would be, you know, pencil pushing my entire life.
I think we're kindred spirits to a degree. When I told my counselor that I didn't want to be a pilot because I needed more social interaction, their response was, well, occasionally, you know, the flight attendants will, you know, pop in, you know, open the door and say hi. And I'm like, that's not what I need. So like you, I've had roles where I kind of interact with marketing and sales and product and technology and get all their different perspectives. So I definitely see where that adds excitement and variety to the role. Before we get deeper into the tax accounting world, just to make everyone listening just as jealous as I am, I know that as we record this, you were getting ready for a trip to the Italian Alps to go fly fishing. And that's not something I think of when I think of the Italian Alps. Admittedly, I haven't fished since the Boy Scouts. Is that something that the Italian Alps are known for? And how did you get into fly fishing?
So, no, the Italian Alps aren't known for fly fishing, but let me tell you a funny story. So I was actually in Breckenridge, Colorado 13 and a half years ago, and I ran into this man. We hit it off. He's now my husband. Go figure. And he was a huge fly fisherman. He guided in Alaska and Chile. He was an Orvis endorsed guide in the Western Rocky and the Adirondack Mountains. And well, you know, I'm a pretty adventurous person. So honestly, I wanted to impress him. So I'm like, yeah, sure, I can learn how to fly fish. And the funny thing is I'm actually not too bad. I can hold my own.
Okay.
But since then, we've had some pretty amazing adventures fly fishing around the country and slowly starting to venture into other parts of the world. This summer, we were off the coast of Martha's Vineyard catching blues. We were in New Brunswick, Canada, fly fishing for Atlantic salmon back in June. We've been off the coast of San Diego catching mako shark, Costa Rica with roosterfish. But the passion was always trapped. So we're going to be in Lake Como, and it was, okay, what adventure can we find with the fly rod in Italy, and what can we catch? So we're going to go after that, what I call the elusive marble trout, and try to find them on the Addo River.
It's exciting. That's really cool. Everyone, I'm sure right now, is just as jealous as I am. Mission accomplished. There's no transition from that back into the glamorous world of tax. So speaking of transitions, how's the transition from salt to focusing on all things OECD? Because you started out in salt. Was that born out of necessity? Was that something you sought after? Was there a gravitational pull?
So the transition from salt to all things OECD was really a progression. After leaving public accounting, my career was what I like to call it, a very long transformation and reinvention. I focused on SharePoint for 7 years, helping our customers define best practices and using technology for document and task management. And then that led into working on federal compliance and provision. And the funny thing with all this non-international tax experience that I had, I never thought I would actually focus on international tax, let alone something very specific like the OECD. But to actually go back and answer your question, it was a combination of necessity. I first started helping perform testing early on, which was, I guess, 8 years ago now, while the product was getting up and running. And then once I learned more about country-by-country reporting, it was an absolute 100% path I wanted to go down. What I liked about it was so similar to the salt work I've done for the last 10 years, where it's like we do have the guidelines, we have the rules and the regulations that you should follow. But every organization, as we know, has their own interpretation of what their rules and their application should be. While things may look black and white, there's a lot of gray. And honestly, I kind of like dabbling in the gray. So over the last 15 years with CorpTax, I've been reinventing myself and continuing to build upon a lot of that knowledge that I've gained. So to me, the glamour about tax is there's always something new to learn and help broaden your current skills and further develop your career.
Yeah, that's that gravitational pull. It sounds like it got you. Now, here's a OECD curveball for you. Globe or Globee? And before you answer, I have to let you know that I posted this question to the OECD on LinkedIn demanding answers on the more important issues, and they did reply to me that is most definitely Globe. Knowing that, Globe or Globee?
Globe. At least that's what I've always called it. Globee to me is a little kind of punchy, so I always like just, you know, it's Globes.
I'm definitely in the Globe camp too. But what about GIF or JIF? Where do you stand on that? Let's get all the important topics out of the way.
It's a GIF.
It's GIF. Good. Good. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Good. You passed.
Okay.
Now,
all right.
From a data perspective, help me get my bearings. Tax provision, income tax compliance, country by country, pillar two. Not an exhaustive list, but thinking about the extensibility of tax department resources, how leverageable can technology and data be across all of these oddly similar yet completely different reporting obligations? And said another way, how leverageable does it have to be to survive?
All right. So that is a lot of information to get through. So let's kind of take it, you know, in pieces.
Sure.
And if we think about it, it's like survival of the fittest, but the technology version. And if we think about that ever-changing, ever-evolving technology that's presented to us, it's the ones that are the fittest that actually survive. So let's first talk about this focusing on technology. technology is not the same as it was last year. It's not going to be the same as it is next year. How do we take that technology presented to us and use it in a way to manage the day-to-day activities of a tax department? Historically, this technology, it was once considered an IT role. And the tax department resources, they were reliant on IT to perform every activity outside of Excel, or I'll date us and go Lotus 1-2-3. But as we all know, you know, there's no longer a trend of that. And the new and exciting trend is the tax teams are now IT. Even with Corp Tax, the majority of our platform administrators are within the tax department. Tax departments are learning how to use and manage various technologies, whether it's Alteryx, Tableau, Power BI, or Power Query, which is a version of Excel, to alleviate redundancies and rework in their daily routine. And frankly, it's not all incumbent on tax teams. Software companies, too, are doing a lot to meet people in the middle. It's not a coincidence that a lot of these emerging tools place an emphasis on giving the everyday knowledge worker that ability to really do tasks that were solely part of IT. Now, in thinking about the data, how does that data fit into this survival of the fittest? And if we think about data and its consumption within these varying technologies, the data has to be fit. Once it's fit, it can be consumed easily across that tax life cycle. So let's take a moment and let's talk a little bit about fit data and what I mean there. So as we know, if you have bad data, the output's bad. It's that old adage, you know, garbage in, garbage out. We don't want that unreliable and sloppy data. We want data that's reliable and, most importantly, structured, so it can be consumed across multiple functions and even multiple technologies. This also holds true for software platforms. If we think about Corp Tax, we maintain a single database that allows our data to be accessible to everyone across all processes. So to state it a little differently, when the data is fit and stored centrally, it can be easily updated when a change in business occurs or a change in reporting requirements like Pillar 2 occur, then it becomes really only a pivot of that data for the tax teams rather than a complete and full rebuild. Now, you may ask yourself, self, and I was hoping for a little laugh there.
A chuckle.
It was a little chuckle, but you know, you have to ask yourself, how and where do I really get started to get control over my data so we can leverage these varying technologies within our departments and maybe start to drive automation? But guys, don't worry out there. You are definitely not alone. We're seeing a lot of our companies trying to figure out how and where to start. But it's first ensuring you have that consistent starting point. Your data has to be clean and it can be consumed without manipulation. So when discussing how and where to start, everybody always recommends start with a nice, small, easy process. Find one where you can continually loading or reloading data, where you're ticking and tying something more than once, or even an activity that takes a significant amount of time to process. This right there is your starting point. It's then getting that data fit. So again, it's reliable, it's structured, and then you can add on technology and build out your automation. So my best advice for all of those using all of these new technologies, start slow and small. And I heard this today, and I thought this was a really cool, because I'm always, you know, the tortoise always wins the race kind of girl, but I love this. It's slow is smooth and smooth is fast. It took me a minute, but I'm like, I really like that methodology.
I like that too. You got to think about it for a second, but I like that. And I like the fit data too. I'm learning a lot today. It's good. Right. It's good stuff. I'm going to steal some of this if you don't mind.
No, absolutely. But there is still one more thing I do want to bring up on this.
Sure.
You know, when we talk about data, so if we think about it over the years, even way back 15 years ago, when I was talking and working on SharePoint and best practices around SharePoint, people were very resistant of change. And I don't know if you've seen this as well, but people are very comfortable with Sally. It's their same process, same as last year. They don't want to change anything. But I don't know, you know, what you're seeing and what you're comfortable with, but I know personally, and what we see is, we can't say this enough, is Sally is definitely not the way of the future. Don't be complacent in a process because you've done it that way for years. Break out of that mold. Don't let that fear of learning something new hold you back. If you think about my career and my transformation journey, if I had become complacent at any part of that journey, I would have never had that ability to learn all of these new processes and determine how we can use them to make our daily tasks even easier. So be adventurous with technology. And as for organizations out there, we need to give employees a little space to be adventurous too.
And I think they expect it now, right? I think it's just the symbiosis of, you know, the resources and the technology feeding off of each other, and the newer generations that have been raised on technology, not those mm-hmm. that it was introduced to at some point, right? That there's this expectation that they have to evolve and they have to keep up with the technology. So I think there's less and less barriers, but I have seen a ton of what you're saying, right? That Sally mindset, right? But I don't think that's a luxury we have anymore. And specifically to pillar two, right? I know you've been focusing more on OECD, and this is a perfect example of such a change where Sally is has no place. Mm-hmm. How are you preparing at CorpTax and in your role? And what do you see happening in the market? Are folks ready? Are they getting ready? Are they thinking about getting ready?
And I laugh because, you know, if you think about any new process out there, there is readiness across the board. But, you know, with CorpTax, and I'll kind of start there with CorpTax first, is we have experts on our international side that have been tracking BEPS since, I don't know, 2012, 2013. And while their focus started with country by country reporting, we've now shifted everything over to Pillar 2. So we released that first version of our product back in July 2022. We started with the ability to perform that risk analysis, but now it's really evolved to include the complexity of that Pillar 2 calculation and all the relating and all of its related computations. And just as we talked about a little bit earlier about that tax professional expanding knowledge, how to wear multiple hats, we're seeing that too with our internal folks. They started with CBC reporting, they moved on to GILTI and now to GMT. So again, I can't say enough, it's continue to gain that knowledge of your career. But taking it back to OECD and Pillar 2, you know, a lot of organizations, so preparedness, and this is always a fun terminology for me, is you have, it's across the board. You have some organizations that are pretty far along. Well, I would say the majority of them are kind of dragging their feet. They're thinking about getting ready, but haven't started the process because they think they don't know where to start from a mm-hmm. process perspective, because there's so much data around Pillar 2 that you have to collect, which to me is a little scary that they haven't started, since one, the compliance process, that compliance requirement's not going away, which I think kind of deep down they may have thought, hey, maybe if I ignore this, this might go away.
Yep. Not the first time.
Yep. Definitely not. Won't be the last either. And then the other thing is they have to include their results in their Q1 provision, which that's kind of around the corner, 6-8 months away. So if you think about it, I think we're going to see a lot of scrambling over the next couple of months, trying to figure out where organizations stand. And a lot of the surveys I've seen too in the marketplace support this as well. We're about half of the organizations haven't started or have started, a quarter of them haven't started at all, and a quarter of them are on some sort of level of analysis. So if we think about Pillar 2 and what we have seen from an analysis perspective and getting ready is around this safe harbor calculation, mm-hmm. since this is really that first step in determining which jurisdictions may end up with that Pillar 2 exposure. So organizations are reviewing their tax year 2022 data set and specifically their trial balances. They're trying to ensure proper alignment first of the trial balance that is consumed again across compliance, provision, country by country reporting, and then determining how that alignment will ultimately flow to the Pillar 2 calculation. And if you think about it, it's taking a look at not only your trial balance data, but all that other ancillary data that you need to report and compile and determine how and where you get that information. So again, as you start gathering that data, you know, you want it to be consistent, reliable, and usable across, again, that tax life cycle. So some of the other things that we're seeing from an organization perspective is they're starting to really define a lot of specific roles and responsibilities for those who are fairly far along for calculating and reporting your Pillar 2 calculation and information. They're trying to determine who will be involved and how. Will the local jurisdictions provide any data? Who's going to own the various components of that GLOBE calculation? And it is GLOBE, not GLOBE. And, you know, what makes everything from a headquarters perspective, who is actually going to be involved? Who has oversight of the process? Is it tax? Is it legal? Is it procurement? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, planners? Who has the oversight? And you're seeing a lot of those discussions internally trying to figure out what that best fit is from an organization perspective. To me, it's very interesting to see any new process evolve. We saw this with country by country reporting. We're now seeing this with Pillar 2. They start with that back of the envelope sort of calculation. And then that evolves into a full blown, all right, let's look at our full process. Let's look at our tax life cycle. What needs to change? In each organization out there, I think they're trying to determine how to strengthen their existing processes and design that more streamlined process using as much technology as possible. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Pillar 2 progresses forward and the GMT landscape changes and how they're going to use technology and all of these efforts with collecting all of this data.
Yeah, and an important part of that equation is the resources themselves, right? Because there is the reality of a bandwidth issue here, right? I mean, and especially in our world, compliance is first, right? So they've got their day jobs, they've got their existing set of obligations. The return's got to get out, they got to get filed. And as you said, this impending scramble to you know, work this into their Q2 provision and get everything set for next year. What are folks doing to keep up? Because as we said, right, the data for Pillar 2 specifically, it's similar, but the work sometimes feels exponential. And you mentioned technology in there a few times, and technology can help, but being proficient in any technology is also a very different career vector than, let's say, being a CPA. So how are tax accountants viewing the resumes differently than they would have maybe 10 years ago in light of these evolving skill sets?
That is, I love that, because if you think about it, you know, when I was in college, I don't know about you, but I'm going to say it was in the 90s, and I'll leave it at that, somewhere in the 90s. There were IT majors, there were accounting majors. You never really overlapped unless you had like that one core business class that you had to take together. Even when I started my first job out of college, computers and technology, they were present, but they didn't consume our daily activities. Then we flash forward, you know, 15 years. Technology, they started to play more of a role with accountants. They're using software to prepare their federal and state returns and using basic Excel functionality with some lookups and maybe some if-then statements, which were pretty, you know, high tech back then, to really, you know, look and utilize the data in its basic form and just focus on descriptive and diagnostic analysis. And then flash forward 10 more years to today. And while not much of any process is done completely manual, so complete shift from whenever I left college to where we are today. And tax accountants, they're using technology in their daily activities more and more, whether it's Alteryx, Excel Power Query, or some other technology out there that can be used to automate their process so they can look at that data differently. Historically, you know, if we think about it from an accounting position, it was all about the tax technical. How well do you know the rules and regulations of a specific process? Well, now that's still important, but today's tax accountant, they're pushed to do a lot more with less and expected to know multiple technologies and really understand data and how to analyze it. So that new tax accountant has to be agile. They need to help facilitate those vast amounts of data that's getting pulled in and consumed by the tax department. I think one of the major differences that we're seeing today is the velocity of data. It's coming in and going out of tax unlike it ever has been before. There's so much more data and it's moving faster than it ever has. And it just keeps compounding year over year. And I saw this statistic the other day that in 2023, the world is expected to create, capture, and replicate 120 zettabytes of data. And for those that you guys don't know what a zettabyte is, because I had to look it up too.
Nope.
It's equivalent, right, to one quadrillion books.
That sound like numbers that my three-year-old son counts with that he thinks are real.
Right? Right? Yeah. And it's like, I've got one quadrillion books, right? Yeah. I've got you one gazillion times. Uh-huh. Yes, but it's...
But it is real.
But it is real. Exactly.
Jeez.
So, Chris, if we think about all of those new reporting requirements that we've seen over the last number of years, whether it's K2, K3, TCJA, OECD with BEPS country-by-country reporting, or GMT requirements, this data hasn't been historically collected. And that new tax account has to determine, going back to what we talked about earlier, who owns the data, how they're going to collect it, but more importantly, how they're going to consume it, and then how they're going to analyze it. Mm-hmm. So those data analytics can be used to facilitate key decisions now across the organization. So said simply, and I think this is key from a tax accountant perspective, is learn to be a problem solver. Learn to think critically rather than just going through the motions. And I think this will set them apart from everybody else. But the other thing that we're seeing technology change so much year over year is trying to figure out what that future tax accountant is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us who've been in the tax world for a long time are seeing a lot of changes, because while a lot of these aspects, tax technical, technology, and data are still important, it's thinking about the future. What's that next big thing that's going to happen, whether it's in the next 3 to 5 or 5 to 10 years? It's thinking about what you can do to become an expert now that will take your career to another level. I think a good example of this is artificial intelligence. I know it scares the crap out of me, but we all know how much of this is going to explode in the near term. Mm-hmm. So how does that fit and relate into tax? Can artificial intelligence be used to facilitate processes to look at data differently? I mean, how can it help me with my career? And I think these are just all questions that we want to ask ourselves as, you know, we determine how and where we want our career to go.
And data stewardship is such a large part of that too, right? And prompt engineering as a skill set worked in there. What about the corporations themselves, right? Because there's the view from the employee of, I'm in this tax department. I need to now use technology to be more efficient in my role or extend the capabilities of my output, let's say. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the perspective of maybe the leadership view of the team, right? And how are we staffing the team? How are we resourcing? To your point, or kind of coming back full circle a little bit, where maybe we started with the reliance on IT and then tax kind of broke off and, you know, had SaaS applications where they could be self-reliant. And now we're getting a little more technical again, but in a symbiotic world where, you know, IT maybe has some enterprise tools, maybe, you know, an in-house version of GPT or you know, these Microsoft applications or things where there's an ecosystem of technologies that are interacting with their tax engines and these different tools. So, you know, when you think about your user base and the folks you talk to, I'm curious if you notice anything about how they're hiring and looking to retain talent when it comes to, you know, upskilling and giving these opportunities to learn these new skills and develop their capabilities. We talk a lot on this podcast about culture of innovation, culture mm-hmm. of learning and development, which is all well and fine as a theory, but what are you seeing in practice?
So that's a lot of information to kind of take in, but there are a number of answers that kind of go along with answering that question. It's not just one path. So mm-hmm. if we think about, you know, let's kind of start with some of the studies that have come across our desk about how difficult it is with people recruitment and people retainment. It's not been an easy from any industry to find talent, let alone retain them. And fortunately or unfortunately for us, tax has not been left out of that. Mm-hmm. And it's thinking about the corporation and how do they manage such a huge change in resources. During COVID, you know, we talked about how to manage change and how change becomes part of our world. And I think this is still very applicable with this volatile environment that we have today with people. Corporations, they want people that are innovative. They can think on their feet. They want individuals that can change with that ever-changing technology, but be able to quickly adapt with those dynamic legislative changes that we've seen over the last 5 to 7 years. It's also having that right balance of tax technical versus technology. And they're looking for people, and I see this a lot, as they may not know the answer to a question, but they've got all of the skills to figure it out. And it's funny to kind of tie this back. You know, we're talking about what it is today, but if we look back at when I was first hired from CorpTax over 15 years ago, I didn't have any SharePoint experience, but I think I had the initiative and the willingness to want to learn and figure it out. Mm-hmm. So while we talk about, you know, people recruitment and people retainment today in one light, I still think it was very applicable back then with software and technology companies that weren't necessarily like that from an organization perspective. But in recent years, we're seeing a lot more willingness for organizations to compromise on tax technical skills versus technology skills. And if we think about it, those technology skills are really fundamental, and tax technical, we can always learn that. Mm-hmm. So with all of that said, there is still that larger issue with people recruitment and retainment we may not have thought of. And I think a lot of it lies with that younger generation. It first intensified with COVID. It's the how, the where, and the why do we work. They have very different priorities than that, say, someone like me that has been in the tax world for over 25 years. They're looking to make a livable salary. They want more work-life balance. Much of that younger generation, they don't want to experience that grind that we did when we were first coming up in the tax world. So I think the balance is, how do we entice that younger generation to come into tax? So when I was deciding to go into the tax field, it's funny, I was talking with my older brother. I'm like, Jeff, man, I'm like, what do you think I should do? I'm like, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And my brother is 12 years older than me, and he had already graduated from college. And he's like, Mary Ellen, listen, there's two things in life that are certain: death and taxes. Go into taxes. Here I am 25 years later, I went into taxes. But with this younger generation, you know, they want more creativity with their jobs. They want to, you know, they want to see something that's appealing. And how do we appeal to that younger generation? And I think you kind of were going down a path on that earlier. It's data science. And I think mm-hmm. that may be the answer. It's going to combine that creativity of technology with the world of tax to make tax fun. If that's a statement, I mean, I think it's fun, but
I think so.
You know, we've got to convince people that it is fun. So it may be a lot of those answers that companies are looking for as they continue to move into more of a technological savvy world. It's making that job more creative and problem solving. It's making it more about that versus just the movement of data. And then the other thing to kind of point out there is, aside from that type of employee that corporations are looking to hire, it's they've got hurdles on their side too, and managing internal change. And I think you kind of hit this earlier when you were asking the question. It's, as we've all seen, that younger generation, like, they don't want to stay in one place for more than maybe 1 to 2 years. Mm-hmm. And how does a corporation bridge that volatility and talent and ensuring their department stays intact when someone leaves? And they want to ensure all processes are automated and that next person can easily step into that role with very minimal effort. And I think this not only applies to the younger generation, but I think it applies across the board, across all positions of an organization and a process, because people do leave. And if you think about it, that work isn't necessarily going away and it's not going to change. So what you want to do is you want to keep the process in there. You want to keep the technology in there and then just layer in a new thinker. So I think the answer to a lot of this volatility that we're seeing with talent may be technology. It's getting your processes aligned, getting them fit along, you know, getting your processes fit, getting your data fit. So then that way, as people leave, you're not going to be scrambling like we have in the past to figure out what that person did and how they contributed, or then everything from a technology perspective is really documented.
Oh, yeah. And too, just like, you know, we had Sally in the past, we had that the comfort of having to go into an office being a limiting factor to that mobility, right? So I think companies could maybe they didn't have to work as hard to retain talent in the past because those options were so limited, and somebody already worked at the two of the three major corporations in that market, then where are they going to go, right? Yeah. So, but now with more remote work, and I know the pendulum maybe seems to be kind of settling in the middle a little, but, you know, with that more opportunities because of that ability to work remotely, there's more effort that's called for as well. And to your statement about death and taxes, I think, you know, if the choices are a tax accountant or a mortician, I do think we have the edge, the cool factor there. So I think at least there we win out a little. But that's what pulled me, right? I was joking earlier when I was applying to the federal air marshals, but it was true. And they said, you know, if you write a series of essays and you take a physical test and a psych test and a drug test, and 6 months later you find out if you got a job, and Tax Dream said, oh, you start Thursday. You know, that was a little bit of an easy call, but at the same time, you know, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't want to do it. And the appeal to me was technology, right? More than that, I don't know if I would have been pulled into a tax or an accounting life if it was the CPA route. So I think mm-hmm. there's other folks that go different paths that find themselves in this mix of talent that you're absolutely right. That appeal on the technology side, I think the more that it's broadcast, the more that we'll see that talent pool develop. Now, I want to ask you real quick about the Corp Tax Conference Connect, right? It's coming up. We're coming up to conference season here and getting to the end of the year. Now, I would love to go to a Corp Tax Conference. I've never been. If for no other reason, I know, you can't see it through the podcast, but I just got a gaping stare of disbelief. But I would love to go for no other reason than to observe and interact with the fan base. And I say fan base specifically because I've always gotten the sense that Corp Tax users were very attached to the software. As someone who deals with the customer day in and day out, what is that like for you? Is that an accurate statement? Is that fair?
Well, I mean, I have to agree with that. I mean, I really do. Our Corp Tax users are very attached to the software. I personally love that, and I'd be a little attached to the software too. I might be a little biased, but I am. But Connect, it's a very personal experience. It's like a family reunion, and I think I can talk for most when I say, you know, Corp Tax is really like a family. everyone genuinely, truly cares about each other. Our last conference was held back in 2022, which was our first face-to-face conference since COVID. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, it was so unbelievably special. Mm-hmm. Just to see our customers interact with each other, interact with us. So let's talk a little bit about Connect. It's about transformation. And to ensure Connect is meaningful and it brings insight to our customers, we're continually changing and updating our conference to adapt and grow and change with the times. We focus on helping tax practitioners transform their tax processes. We work with them so they can use, they can learn, and they can grow with technology. We help them focus on functionality that's in Corp Tax today, what requirements may be new to them, you know, Pillar 2. We've got a lot of classes coming up in Pillar 2, mm-hmm. and all while being supported by a Corp Tax team that most of us have been in their shoes along the way. And then speaking about transformation, I think this leads me to the best part of Connect. And our president likes to say it is the most wonderful time of the year. And yes, I promise you, you will have that stuck in your head. But the best part of Connect is our Tax Transformer Awards. And the Tax Transformer Awards, it provides a forum for our customers to share their innovative and transforming stories about how they use Corp Tax and other technologies to transform their processes and departments. Every year, we collect stories that showcase the benefits achieved by our customers, whether it's they're creating automation within a tax return or provision process, or implementing a new module that just saved them a ton of time. So it's just a very exciting part of Connect. And Chris, earlier, I talked a little bit about the many hats that I've worn in my career, as well as the many hats that I wore in Corp Tax. Mm-hmm. One of the hats that I might have accidentally left out is I'm very fortunate that I actually get to co-host the Tax Transformer Awards. How and fun. I've been doing this since 2018. And yes, this actually means I'm on stage at the opening and closing ceremonies, talking in front of, I don't know, 1,000 people, which is funny because everyone's like, oh, hey, how is that? Once you get past the first 10 rows, you can't see anything because the lights are so bright. So you're good. I usually focus on one or two people to kind of talk to as I'm talking, but it's pretty cool. And I can't begin to tell you how honored I am that I get to share all of the great stories about how organizations are using all of these technologies that we've talked about over the life of our podcast to transform their processes. It's pretty amazing. And I'm sure you can hear the excitement in my voice about it.
it sounds genuine. And again, I can see your face here, which folks listening cannot. And I can see the genuine excitement there. And I give you a lot of credit for getting up there and speaking. My tactic is always to just look over the crowd and just look at like the back wall or something. everyone's got their tricks, but I give you a lot of credit for that. Speaking of the conference, too, I want to ask you about one last facet of the conference and also kind of your personal journey through your career. In looking into Connect, I noticed that there is a Women in Tech breakfast this year. I don't know if that's a regular staple or something new that's been introduced, but as a woman in tech, right? But with all these changes that we've been speaking about in roles and skills, what does that mean for equitability in the profession? And what does it mean for you to be in this position?
Well, for me, I think it's pretty amazing just to see where we've grown and the opportunities that we have had over, I would say, since I started my career 25 years ago. I may have been very fortunate in my career where I've always been, how will I put it? I've always put myself out there. So I've always had an opportunity that I feel like has been very personal and special to me as I've been coming up through tax in the last 25 years. But let's talk a little bit about the Women in Technology Breakfast. And I think first and foremost, Connect 2022, so last year was our first year in hosting the Women in Tech Breakfast. Mm-hmm. We had 120 seats.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up being standing room only.
Wow.
Which was pretty cool. So what we have seen is women are really continuing to build a place in tax and also in top positions in tax. And I think we've continually seen that over the last 10 years. We've seen this shift not only in corp tax, but across industries where more and more women are in leadership positions. And I think a big contribution to that is events like this, where giving women a space to network, the ability to share tips and tricks, and really have a place to confide in others that are similar to them, I think it only helps them build their support network. Women continue to be resourceful. They've adapted with change and they've got willingness to change. And this, to me, again, all ties back into that successful career path that we talked about. And what do you want to have the ability to do? We've even seen this with our parent company, CSC, where our board of directors, like our CSC leadership team, they have a strong representation across all demographics. And as a global company, across all genders, all ethnicities, and women make up a very high percentage of our leadership. And they're in very key roles throughout the organization. And what I like about our parent company, and I think I'm going to almost end it on this, is you typically hear equity and inclusion. You know, that's a pretty standard statement. But our parent company, CSC, their way is equity and belonging. So not only should everyone be included, everyone also belongs.
I like that.
So to me, I couldn't ask for a better organization to work for.
Yeah, that's a real nice way to put it, and a really nice way to end the podcast. It's great that you guys do that at the conference. I'm glad you started that, and everyone has that safe space to, you know, connect and network and feel comfortable and supported and encouraged to to chase their dreams wherever that takes them on that journey. So, Mary Ellen, thank you so much. This was an incredible conversation, and I one day will make it to CorpTax Connect, and I will see you there.
Hopefully I will see you in December 2023, if we're lucky.
Sure. I'll see what I can do. All right, Mary Ellen, thanks so much.
All right, great. Thanks, Chris. Thank you for taking the time. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Tax at the Speed of Tech, a BDO podcast. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Head to BDO.com to access resources cited in this episode and learn more about BDO's approach to tax innovation. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, or if you want to discuss your organization's tax technology strategy, send us an email at tax@thespeedoftech@BDO.com.